You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hello, welcome to the first Detroit Soccer District podcast where we talk all things soccer and the Detroit soccer landscape. I'd like to send a shout out to Soccer Plus for all the gear that they provided for us. They're located in Livonia and Novi, Michigan. We got four topics tonight: increasing popularity in the lower division systems, the U.S. style of play, youth, no heading rules, and growing soccer in the inner city. So with that being said, I'd like to introduce our cast here.
I'm Marcos Pereira. I manage Varsia FC. We play MUSL West Region, over 30, over 40, and now over 48.
Nice. Keith Baldwin, from England, London originally, and coach over here. I've coached for a number of teams in Detroit, coach for the Nationals right now, and also run the legendary UK Royals over 40 in the MUSL, and still play over 30 when I can.
Thomas Kamenu, teammate of Joe's.
Yeah. Now, there's more to Thomas. He's the most unorthodox player you know. Yeah, go ahead, but he's the most effective player. You can share, man. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, just play with Joe. I coach Foundation Soccer with Detroit City, and that's about.
Where'd you play college?
Evergreen State College. It's kind of a hippie school. And, yeah, I guess they allowed a lot of different styles to bloom there. So
NAIA,
that's where I fit
right?
in, NAIA school.
Yeah.
All right. Where is this school?
Olympia, Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're pretty good in the NAIA, right?
Yeah, when I was there, best couple of years in the history of the school. So.
Oh, nice. All right. With, you know, no further ado, we'll get into it. So, Marcos, I'll start with you, mate, and everyone can chime in. You know, how and why should we make the lower divisions in the U.S. like more popular? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this thing because it's not only soccer, but I think every sport and every entertaining thing. I think people only look the top, the best, and we forget to look everywhere and. You have fun watching every game, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the game has to be competitive to be fun, and I think it's something that we need to change in our mentality to be able to watch more teams of our community playing than only stick on your home watching the top division on the TV, right? It's not only the matter of you watch the game, but you'll be involved with your community mm-hmm. and help grow more players in the base. Because
yeah.
today the soccer in the end is only focused, even here in US, we talk about European soccer, right? And even in Brazil, where I come from, European soccer start becoming more important than the local teams too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So when I brought this topic to you, it's really, how can we, and I know that's hard because as the media put only the focus on what is on the top, the media mm-hmm. doesn't help. And even people try to accommodate and say, oh, no, I'm going to stay home. I want to watch the mm-hmm. game. And the max that you see people going out is to see their kids playing, right,
yeah.
in the youth.
Yeah.
But what division are you talking about that's not popular?
Even in Europe, you see the second division more popular, even maybe the third. In Brazil, the second and the third is pretty much nobody in the fields there. Here in US, what we have, here is a little bit more complicated, the leagues, right?
Right, but you got Detroit City.
Detroit have fans there, right?
Oh, but 8,000,
huh? Yeah, Cincinnati is now MLS, but they grew from...
Yeah, they grew from...
From a lower yeah. division. I mean, yeah. it's just, I think, like you say, and you go Brazil or England and soccer countries. Like I got friends who are Palace fans like myself, and when Palace don't play, they go to a non-league game. But they're mm-hmm. more like connoisseurs of the game, and they want to watch the game. In America, it's like you just go for the experience. So I think the ones that have done it well, like Detroit City, and I don't know Cincinnati too well, but I assume that they created the family experience. And that's what probably gets the fans in.
You can't forget the Bucks too.
And the Bucks,
yeah. You guys
now up in
any
Flint, right?
Man, they're a solid squad. You ever see Bucks play?
Well, I've watched them play. I haven't been.
Oh, they're a good team, but how is the audience for their games? It's like Detroit FC?
Not as good, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, they're just moving to Flint. You know, Demir and then Andy Wagstaff are taking them over this year. And, you know, they're the only show now in Flint. So I think that's, you know, they're going to pull a lot of youth soccer players. If you can engage, like, the clubs and get them to the games, then that's a big start.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. It's all about the experience because, like, I went to a DC United game last week, and you could tell nobody knew anything about soccer, but, like, the quality of that game was top-notch. You could see how the players held the ball, and, like, I love that. I was thriving in that. But then I have a guy next to me saying, play soccer. And that was like, okay,
what were they doing? They got baseball bats out instead or something?
Exactly. So, like, experience – like, the American culture so far only cares about experience. That's what they're trying to build, I think, just culture. Culture, just now.
Yeah, let's talk about here. I say globally, in Brazil, we have problem because only the big games have audience. When you go out of the big cities, it's like you have 1,000 people in the stadium in the first division.
That's not
game.
True. Look at Chapecoense.
Brazil.
Chapecoense is a exception, but look, Ponte Preta, Guarani, that's countryside of São Paulo.
Ah, that's São Paulo. Who cares about São Paulo?
Oh, it's the rest of Brazil, too.
I'm from the Northeast, man, and I represent the Northeast.
Yeah. So. But I say it's a matter of spreading more the soccer, because when you look soccer in the world, and now looking from the Brazil side more, If you don't play first division, you're gonna die poor there. You're not gonna make too much money, and the place for a first division is tight for the number of players, right? I say it's,
that's Brazil, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but how is in Europe this thing? The salary is more like second division, third division. You can make your living for your life.
Big
there.
Big money in the Championship in England, and then. You know, you go to your third division, your League One, League Two. It's, you know, the better players are probably on 40, 50,000 a year. I mean, not too much, but, you know, full-time pros.
That's League Two?
Three and four.
Three and four. That's
good.
That's what some players are making in MLS.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know the exact wages, but I know you're a full-time pro if you're in League Three and League Four.
So now,
you're not getting rich, but you're paying your bills.
How are you going to make it popular? No player in their right mind, if they want to, like, maybe start a family or even put food on the table for themselves, they're not going to be in these lower divisions in the United States if they can't earn a wage.
Well, it's like all sports in America. If you, it's like baseball. I mean, I'm not a real baseball fan, but I saw a documentary on the guys in the AAA and all that. These guys, they're not even making anything. Like, they're hardly even able to buy anything. So, but everyone's got the dream, right? You're going to be the one who's going to get picked up.
Yeah.
You're going to be the one who's scouted, you know, and then all the people who own the AAA baseballs, like Toledo Mud Hens or whatever, the owners are getting rich because they're filling the stadiums because they make an experience. Yeah. Not much else to do in Toledo. Yeah. Ohio's a shithole. And but that's what it is, lower divisions here. But I think soccer is a bit different because you're not, unlike baseball, you know, if you're playing for Detroit City, you've probably got other things going on. You're probably quite young and you still got a chance of getting picked up. If you're 26, 27, 28 and you know your chance is gone, you've probably got something else going on the side.
Yeah, but that's, Marcos made a good point. He was like, why not extend the useful life of a player?
Yeah, because I think that's the important, because men and players most come from poor families, right? So they.
That's not true.
Not true. Not true today.
Stereotypes.
I know. Yeah, but if you dedicate, the life that you can grow in another in another job in that 20 to 30 years old, right? If you then go to the market, find another job after you play soccer, how are you going to find a good job after that?
What are you saying? You want good wages for 30-something ex-pros?
I don't know. We need to build something.
But isn't the point of a second and third league in America as the game's growing to have an opportunity for those 17, 18-year-old or just come out of colleges those type of players to play rather than now if a 35-year-old who's really good wants to come and play and mentor others and still play but not worried about the money, that's one thing. But, you know, where are you going to get the money from to pay them if they want more money?
Yeah, I don't say high salary there, but livable salary.
No way.
I think these go together. I don't know if these go together.
If you're a good enough player, you'd be able to play there. You'd be able to get some coaching gigs. You'd be able to get some other stuff going on.
Go to Dubai. You gotta, if you're older, 35, go to Dubai.
It's not the cheapest place, but
yeah. You're right. But they pay big money for players like that.
And oh, they pay China.
China too, yeah.
I mean,
China,
they pay big, not for anyone. You got to be in the top league in Europe.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, I say it's worse than the other jobs, right? If you fail there, and sometimes you fail not only because it's not only about the skills; it's politics there. You're gonna see many players that not gonna succeed. That's much better than people even playing top teams.
I was thinking about that. People say that all the time, like, oh. You know, I grew up, my family's from Northeast Brazil. A big person that came out of there from my mom's city was Rivaldo. And then some people would bash him, like, oh, yeah, I knew players better than him. But where are they at?
Yeah, I know. If you're lucky, is have a good manager there that help if be the right place on the right time there.
I think if you have that, like, you have what differentiates people like from like being great, you know, superstar, world class, is like that one inch. And I think like players like Rivaldo had that, or players like, let's say, Landon Donovan in the United States. You know, would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think it's that thing. It's being the right time, right place, and you can be picked up there. And work hard.
Yeah.
Work hard.
There's a lot more to it than that, but that's part of it. You know, you got to have the skill and you got to have the dedication. And I mean, you can tell a little bit. You can tell who has the potential. You know, I hate it when, you know, being around youth soccer for 20 years in different states here. You see kids who are good and some people who are just like, you know, parents who are like 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds just thinking their kids, because their kid's really good at that age, that, you know, they're on a great course for a Division I scholarship. It's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you can tell kids who have potential at 8, 9, but there's so much growing stuff going on, like 13, 14, 15. That's the age when you're really, their brain functions and the soccer intelligence. It's that extra half a second where you find that pass and you make that pass. That makes you play quicker than others. I mean, there's a lot of factors to it, but, you know, there's a whole different topic of how you find talent when you're young. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Going back to these lower leagues, I'm confused. We've gone back in now with the pros.
That's the thing.
What do you want with these lower leagues in America? In American lower leagues, what do you want?
Well, if we can bring them more popular,
not popular? Which ones aren't? You got Detroit that's made it. You got. Yeah. Cincinnati is doing well. Bucks do decent.
Another
Michigan
big
stars,
thing is futsal's coming big too in Detroit. Yeah. Futsal.
Yeah, well, there's and futsal.
There's a lower league of futsal too.
You know, Ann Arbor, Drew Ducker doing the Mud Puppies out there. I mean, you know, they're sustaining. And it's building the interest from the youth. Like, you know, I've been involved with the futsal, you know, and as Drew Ducker's done the futsal academy and my daughter's played. And now more and more and more kids, since she's been playing 5 years, he's got more and more and more teams. And, you know, we just went out to Kansas and I think 5 of our teams got to the finals and 2 of them won it. So,
Nationals? What's the team name?
Michigan Futsal Academy.
Okay. I heard Detroit Elite FC is pretty good too.
That's another one. That's a newer one.
From the boys.
But the more that we can have some local strong competition, because the Futsal Academy, you know, we were only having to, you know, there wasn't many good competition. Even if you go to Chicago, there's one or two teams. If you go to like an Ohio competition that come up from places.
Mm.
But, you know, you need areas that focus on futsal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, get back to the lower leagues. Defend it.
No, if it's happening, maybe it's good. Maybe soccer here is young. It's too young, right?
It's growing
strong. Was like the young age takes a while here. We have pretty good 70s. Then the thing pretty much disappeared in the 8s, right?
And yeah,
then they start coming back after
grown,
the World
I mean,
Cup.
MLS, the league's grown. And
maybe it's,
the
it's
Open
time
Cup,
to...
Riverhounds. There's been a whole bunch of teams that are
don't
lower
forget the Rockers,
well.
Detroit Rockers, back and in the 90s, baby.
And maybe, yeah, basically because the size of the country, you'll be more like... Because Brazil in the past was more like this. The state cups, the state championship was more important than national one. Right? Remember when São Paulo League was more important than the Brazil League? Rio League was much more important than the Brazil League?
Yeah, but there's a big reason.
We keep going back to Brazil. But yeah. Brazil's like,
no,
I'm
know,
just saying.
But
it's
the size
it's
of the country,
compare.
Right?
No, but you're
yeah,
like
it's
Brazil.
Good to compare, what
yeah,
I mean.
It's, we cannot fall like Brazil fall, that only MLSL will be, MLS will be important. We need to...
But if you go to a lower league game in Brazil, I mean, I've been to Brazil. I haven't been to a lower league game in Brazil, but it's I assume you go because the people understand the game and they want to see the game, and then it's maybe their local team.
Yeah.
They're not so much going for like an experience or a day out. They just because they've chosen a team to support and they go to watch the game and see the quality and skill of the players. And in America, you don't set up too many teams like that. They go. Business people buy a franchise or set up a team with the aim of growing it into a franchise and then create an experience for people to come.
Yeah, so yeah maybe this is different than Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Brazil, the problem is the small teams start losing their fans because with the TV and internet, the guy that lives in the other side of the north side is support a team in São Paulo. Is they just look the top teams because
that's
the
true.
TV bring you that there.
Yeah.
10 years ago, 20 years ago,
that's
the
right, yeah.
the games was only one game that show in the TV, two games per week. So the guy have to follow the local team
right.
if he wants to see games. Now he don't go in the morning stage because they want to see the big teams playing.
It all has to do with infrastructure.
Yeah, it's infrastructure, and
it's
if
10,
we build here
ago.
That is building more, maybe here. Gonna succeed more in this thing.
Yeah, I just say my question is where's it not succeeding? If you wanted the question of how do we improve the lower leagues?
Yeah,
what's wrong with the lower leagues here?
Oh, here I don't know. I follow more of Brazil and Europe.
He wants
and,
he's
and
thinking
I
about making it more popular.
Yeah,
but yeah, shout out to DCFC. They
DCFC. Yeah
they
yeah,
even
I
got
go
a spot on FIFA.
There.
They got a spot on FIFA. Yeah. FIFA did a whole story on them. So
yeah,
that was,
they are great.
Yeah,
they
so
are,
they're getting popular. Flint Bucks, I think they need Bucks, more recognition.
Bucks, because I went to see one game between them, the Detroit fans get pretty much the.
But I think
the
quality
at
the Bucks is like.
Oh, Bucks is better.
The quality,
team than
the quality is like
phenomenal,
man. They import people from all over the and you see their touch is pinpoint.
Yeah, they are better. They win the game 3-0
before the past couple
normally
of years.
Pretty close when they play. I'm sure they'll play a friendly at the end of the season. Yeah,
Detroit FC varies too much because they rebuild the team pretty much every year, right?
They have tryouts. I mean, but
they
have a consistent that core, and then. But yeah, that's a lower league, and I think they're
They own one league below, right?
So what are they USPL? What is that? Does anyone know?
They create a new league now.
Yeah, they create a new
MPSL
league.
MPSL and then MPSL Pro, but it's called Founders Cup.
No, Founders Cup?
For Detroit City?
Yeah you would
so
know.
So it's MPSL and then there's a new, it's going to be
new
MPSL
league,
Professional full season next year. But after the MPSL regular season, they're going to have something called Founders Cup, where it's the professional teams, the Cosmos and all them.
Well, they're going to play with Cosmos in that league.
All right, well, let's move on. I think we butchered this lower division thing.
Knew so much about the Brazil lower leagues.
So, let's talk about the U.S. system. So, like, with these futsal teams and all these lower league divisions, so what do you think, what kind of style of play are they instilling here? Like, what is the style of play in the U.S.? What's the U.S. system?
It's 4-3-3. That's what they teach throughout the system. That's what they want. Unless they've changed it in the past year, but, being involved with the academy, especially Klinsmann put it down that he wanted 4-3-3.
Yeah.
And that then all the age groups were going to play 4-3-3. If you ran a director's academy or coaching it like I did at the Wolves for a while, you were meant, you didn't have to do a 4-3-3, but it was kind of preferred.
Why?
You know, and so that's what they're looking for. You
Why?
Know.
The, well, I they think like because it, also 4-3-3 become pretty much most big teams in Europe, one and another play different, but 4-3-3 is the more common now there, right?
Yeah, it's a mix. I mean, it's definitely a popular one. To me, you know, formations come in trends.
Yeah, there's always a new thing, you know.
Unlike they do a false nine, and everyone wants to do a false nine.
I saw
nine,
a W you know? Once, yeah. back in like
the 70s. Yeah, M was MW, right?
Yeah, like
a 4-2-2-4, three-two-two-three, something like
that.
But this is what the 56, the big team there, not Germany that won the cup. What
56?
Yeah, what the best team there. Germany won the cup, but
50 was Uruguay.
No, 56 was.
It wouldn't even be 56. It'd be 54.
No, Sweden. Yeah, Sweden have a great
team. It's 54.
1954. No, 54. Sorry, 54.
Yeah, 56, 62, 58, 54. Yeah.
54 was Sweden the big team. No, we're
going back now. 7 years.
Hungary, maybe Hungary.
Yeah, that's the one that played the MW thing.
And Netherlands, they had the total football in the '80s, right?
That was 70s with Cruyff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's.
But these are formations.
Big change. Yeah,
I mean, somewhat dictates style, but
yeah, style is a little bit different too, right?
Yeah, yeah. But the formation? I can't. So like, why did he choose that? Is it because of the type of players that he has? Like, is it? I think, man, three in the middle, you get killed against a great team.
Yeah, that for me, this thing with formation, I always think that the coach have to have at least two formation because they need to transition during the game.
Well, you gotta have a style, but yeah, you gotta be able to change.
Yeah, you have to be able to.
I'm laughing because sometimes I do pay attention to formation, but I'm really not paying attention to formation.
Unorthodox.
Okay, on our team we play a three back.
Yeah,
me and Joe.
I like the three back.
Yeah,
and there's a and then
I like three back.
Some of the times, the only time I'm really thinking about the formation is when I see somebody who's the wing back, the five. It's a three back, but it's more like a five back. Mm-hmm. And I'm the other winger, and I see what the other wing back's doing, and it's like, do they know that this three back really is a five back, and that they have to get back and cover that guy.
Yeah.
And that's like most of the time I'm paying attention to attack.
Which league is this? Which league is it?
It's an indoor league.
So we're comparing that to the US national team's style of play. Yeah. You know, if I'm looking at, you know, it's like,
I'm just saying that I personally don't pay that much attention to formation.
Right, but if you're a professional.
As far as my style of, what's the US style of play? Are we looking at the US national team? And if we're talking about an American style play, would that translate down to younger kids?
What is it? What's the US? Well, it depends. If you're in a club, you could translate it down. If your coaching director has a set policy
What's the style at nationals?
Well, G, who's doing the coaching manual, and he's still yet to put it out. But you know, so there's not a definitive. Hey, we're going to play this type of formation, but the style is always. Quick passing, you know, aggressive and attacking.
Aggressive.
Just, yeah, I mean, typical.
Say it.
Typical, I mean, is a bit more aggressive than, say, some other clubs, but.
Aggressive American style.
No, I don't mean it like that. Okay. But, I mean, you got to find that balance of winning the ball and then what you do with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so both are important. And some teams, you know, can be have the players to be able to play a lot more one touch and fluid possession, and others maybe have to use their physicality a bit more depending on the players.
Yeah, I think everything depends on the players.
In Detroit, I think the style can translate because Detroit's largely African-American. And I think a style of flair and a more like artful style can be rooted here in Detroit instead of like the aggressive.
But then you're not talking for me. You talk about art or more physical game, right?
Yeah, you play an Albanian team.
You have to be physical. But who is it? Let's think of African teams. They're very physical. They're very fast. They can't shoot. That's my opinion. But Brazil always.
Yeah, Drogba was rubbish.
Who?
Drogba.
Drogba was a king, man.
Yeah. Oh, he was African, wasn't he?
Yeah, but yeah, he's an exception. Him and Eto'o are exceptions, and a few others.
Never be another good striker out of Africa. Sadio Mane. But yes.
Keep going. Keep going. Who's from Palace?
Roger Miller. Come on.
Roger Miller, Cameroon, yeah.
Oh, Roger Miller.
Roger
yeah.
Miller, come on. That's great. Mo Salah's crap as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, they can't shoot. Carry on, Joe.
They can't. Okay. Okay. But no, think of Brazil. How many times did they lose to African nation teams?
Rare, isn't Nigeria it? Oh, in the yeah. Olympic final, right? That was a few years ago.
Was Olympic final?
Yeah, it was Olympics. 1996, right before 1997.
Yeah, it was semifinal, right? Or final?
Yeah, it was semi. It was yeah, the Olympics.
It was 96. It was right before
Olympics
the war.
Doesn't really matter, but
was yeah. Luxemburgo the coach, right?
Yeah, it does matter to Brazil. Didn't you see Neymar celebrating like crazy when he won the Olympics?
Okay. So how does it's this? So what style of play? What are you trying to get to with this?
I'm saying like.
For you're talking about Brazil against Africa.
Well, he's saying
we're
like
back in Brazil now. Tom. No, all right. I think we're going to be in Brazil a lot.
We're
going to
be
three.
In Brazil. We can be in England. We can be in Detroit.
No,
let's
I'm
be in
fine
Detroit.
With that. I'm just no, trying so to see what I'm saying. What do you mean he's about style
he's like.
Play?
So he said an Albanian team's aggressive. Yeah. Okay.
Or dirty.
But,
one of the others.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm saying like, I think like a art style like a tiki taka, for instance. That outbeats the aggressive play for sure. Like he was, and I was comparing Brazil and African nations because African nations have an aggressive style of play. Mm-hmm. And then Brazil has a, like, I would say kind of flair style of play. And they have a good track record against African nations.
Okay.
Brazil have the quality play in terms of tactical game. Yeah. I think
I get it. There's different sport. Levels there. Yeah. Different levels.
I think just like, pinpointing style of play in such a large country with, yeah. I mean, I don't think they, if there's one archetype of player that I see that's is valued a lot in the U.S. style, it's the type of dribble who is a charger.
Yeah.
Someone who gets the ball in the midfield yeah. and kind of just hunkers down and is very fast and just runs forward with the ball.
Or crash the net, as they say in America, yeah, right? Yeah. Go think, crash the net.
I think that, like that dribbling style, that's like the most – I don't know about other countries, but when they're like, this guy's really good, and I watch them and it's like they're just fast. Like – they're just fast running with the ball straight up the middle in the midfield. They're not like looking where the passing options were open. They're like – I'm taking this to the house.
Well, I'd agree with Tom a lot because you look at, you know, who gets the respect. Like Pulisic, yeah, good player, tons of potential. You know, I'm glad he's not getting dogged on, but he's made a few mistakes. And then someone like Michael Bradley, like America loves to hate Michael Bradley because he doesn't score
simple,
too many goals,
simple.
But he's good. He's done well for America over the years. I mean, is he going to be in the world 11? No, but, you know, he deserves a lot more respect than he gets in this country.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, I think Detroit has the potential with the who lives here, like the residents here. They have a potential to create their own style and a successful style.
Well, you know, we have a lot of players who make the national team from
Detroit.
I'm not going
to say only
from different
Detroit.
Ages.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sure. Women's and men's, under 15s, under 17s.
I remember.
You know, nationals, Sunisad, Hawks players
Josh,
all get called up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You always have the same let's say, environment to create players like Brazil is mix of
back
many
in Brazil.
Nationalities.
I need a buzzer here. Every time I hear Brazil, I'm going to
hit
a buzzer.
Hit the bell. All right.
Hit the bell. Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, we have the mix of many nationalities here.
Yeah.
And it's same as Brazil. Brazil is a mix of many nationalities.
That's true.
And the soccer has become popular with youth. So it's just matter of playing and move up to the professional level, right? Here we have all the potential to create great players in the future.
I want to get away from like I want U.S. style. Like I want to get away from like try to emulate in Europe or anything else like that.
The only thing that I complain a little bit in the because my son play youth here, and I think there is one point 1 year. And then he start not liking too much because I think up to one age and you said, and you coach you have more to say than me. But I think so. You, as you said, 15 that the players start knowing more about the game. But until 15, the thing has to be more fun for the kids, something that they can develop more creativity.
Well, not get on not the field, to, not to, yeah.
Yeah, on more creativity I get, on the I get field what you're saying, and take not, risk.
Right.
But what started happening, he was 10 years old and the coach already trying to put too much tactics and not and cap the
yeah,
the
but you're going down a whole huge new topics here, which is fine. But yeah, I mean, you've got to have age appropriate development. You've got to have a coach that encourages risk and doesn't bash them for mistakes, because how else do you learn by making mistakes? You've got to have that, you know, learn discovery of development. You know, my point when I just said 15 is, you know, there's no, you can't tell a great player. You look at someone like, you know, someone who's been in the news right now, Declan Rice, you know, because he's the guy who switched from Ireland to England. He was released at Chelsea at 15, 16. He wasn't meant to be the hot new thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so he accepted to play for Ireland in the youth levels mm-hmm. at 15, 16. And now, 4 years, he's had a huge trajectory. And at 20, he's the star for West Ham.
Mo Salah, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he flopped at Chelsea after moving from Basel. I mean, but he's even a bit older. But I'm just saying, you know, if you're, it was in relation to a point of who can maybe make it, you know, someone at 10, you can say they got potential, but someone at 15 is that if they're cognitively reading the game faster than others and they've got that technical skill, that's someone you can, you know, maybe pinpoint a bit more.
I went to the Urban Soccer Diploma in Washington, D.C. for United Soccer Coaches, and they have that. They have late bloomers. They have late bloomers. I was one of them. You know, hit the bell. When I was in Brazil playing. When I was in Brazil playing, I was one of the average players, but like I late bloomed, and they used to call me perna de pau, which means like wooden leg. So I would like
it's still.
So yeah, I was not good until.
What's that? Explain it.
It wooden leg. It means like you have like planks for legs, and you kick around like the ball comes in.
Oh,
and just
like your
out.
Tree trunk. Okay.
You can control the ball.
It's different to a third leg.
Elephant touch.
I just want to know. Just a full explainer on that.
Okay. Yeah. So. Yeah, there's late bloomers, and like we have to nourish that, man. Like, if they start getting focused on Fortnite at what 15 or whatever, I don't know what the kids are into, but nourish the kids, man. Have it fun, yeah. But at the same time, that's like the learning period.
I understand, but you have to understand that you have to give the tactical and the game reading. Of course, that they have to learn in the young age, but. You can't pressure too much them to learn because you can make them not like the game too, right? And you can cap a little bit the skills of develop their art, you think, more.
All right, let's just wrap up with this because I know we're getting off topic. Yeah. It was like you want what's the U.S. style of play? Mm-hmm. I guess all four of us, what is it in your opinion in like 20 seconds?
Kick and run.
I was saying yours, Tom.
You go first.
Tom,
needs
more time.
I would say you'll be more a tactical organizer.
You know what, you have a couple of minutes there.
You'll be more a tactical organized thing with contact, more like a tactical.
You think it's tactical?
Yeah, that's more tactical. You'll be more tactical than art or any other thing. More like a England style, but yeah, more like that.
What's it? I would say what's an England style, but that's a whole other thing. Because you know, England style is different now to what it used to be. I would say the U.S. style, I know they tried to, originally when they were crafting the style, they wanted to be a mix between European and Brazilian soccer. So, yeah, listen, I've got about I got about 100 more Brazils to go. 100 more Brazils to go before I get my first ding.
But I agree that they can do that.
They want to be a mix, and they've done a decent job of it. You know, why they do the 4-3-3 is, you know, to have that wingers and have the attack, and then they, you know, how to do the press and stuff. But, you know, it's possession-based with a bit more, you know, It's that mix of the build up, the slow build up of Italians, and then the attacking style of the Brazilians. With it's meant to be somewhere in the middle. And as they try and find their own identity, you know, that's what they're looking for.
Anyone see that video from the Wolves? I think Scott Duell's program. His players like they had that like a teamwork goal.
Oh yeah, I seen that.
That
one.
Was nice, man. That was. Yeah. I was like, this is coming out of. Like Michigan, I was yeah. Oh man, I'll show you later. It's beautiful.
Yeah, send.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so for my style, I would say, I mean, like probably any other country, there are a lot of styles in different areas, especially with all the different types of communities, depending on your nationality and those enclaves. You could have a lot of different styles, but as far as like American style, it'd be what is valued and what is allowed to be passed on to the next level or the higher level, and then what's put onto the American team. So I'd say someone who's is physically stronger and faster. There's not a lot of – you don't have somebody like Iniesta would be on your team, somebody who's like probably not somebody you'd be like, wow, that guy – like you want to look at Iniesta and be like, that guy's real strong or that guy's an athlete if you saw him with his shirt off.
True.
So like you probably nobody on the American team would be like that. So I'd say somebody who's very fit, very fast.
Physical, right?
Physical,
yeah.
And then now I think somebody who's technically developed, like, and they want to keep the ball a lot, but I think has been taken to a certain extent without that kind of creativity or, like, wanting to score. They're more technically developed now, but without that, like, understanding of going – that creativity is missing. There's something. They're like technical robots a little bit going towards that, it seems like. And I don't know. Right now I'm not the biggest fan of like that stuff, the U.S. team.
Yeah, because unfortunately for you, people don't understand. If you guys seen Tommy play, he's very effective. He always wins the ball and he does some good things, but I don't think people value that like because they want a fast kid that can just run down the flanks.
I value you, Tommy.
Thank you. I mean, you seen him play? I'm definitely not the.
No, but I value
you. I want to use me as like a total example. But I
value Tommy. I wait for him to turn 30 years old to be.
Yeah,
on the
team.
He
wants
there
to pick him up for this team.
I mean, I would see players that I mean are much better than me and are very skilled and aren't like they. And I see them running for a ball, and it's not like oh they're fast. It's like this guy's kind of can't really move around that well, but they find really good passes. They're very skilled in that way, and sometimes it's a little sloppy, but they're really trying things a lot of the time, which I don't think is valued in the U.S.
All right. So we got here. Let's transition here. Let's go on the, and you probably have a big say on this. The thoughts of the no heading rules.
Yeah, it's pretty simple for me. It's a good idea, and it's pretty stupid to argue against it these days. You know, why would you need a 9-year-old to head the ball? Just because I headed the ball in England, you know, from a keeper's punt, and I remember heading it, you know, wrong, and it hurt the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what's the point? You know, if you're trying to build a technical game. You know, then you want a big, strong, someone who's 8 and maybe, you know, developing quicker and a foot taller than everyone else, whacking the ball and heading the ball when little kids can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's health and safety and it helps you develop a better technical game. And I think 11 and 12 is the right age to change it. And like my daughter, she's, you know, she's in her first year of heading and all the kids there, they've picked it up pretty quick. It's not like it's some huge hurdle to overcome.
What if – so I've seen it before. It's kind of cringy. Like the ball comes to their head and they duck. What do you – so do you like – are you for that though? If it in the vicinity, you just do it?
You know, well, you get – the law is or rule is that if it's an intentional header, it's a free kick. Hmm. So, yeah, I mean if I was here and I hit the ball and it hits your face – a referee, obviously, that's not intentional, that's you not, know.
Yeah.
But, it's not intentional. But yeah. you know, again, if they know it's the rule and they duck, I mean, it's not that hard to say, hey, this season you're allowed to head. We're not going to duck anymore. This is how you head a ball. You do a few sessions on heading, and
what happens to the player when they get to that age where they're heading? Are they still, you know, ducking, or what?
The better ones aren't. No, I mean, if you're on the first team of most clubs, I mean, you're aggressive, you want to win, you want to play, and so you're headable. And as long as you can coach them how to head it correctly, anyone who's got a bit of trepidation about it, you know, once you show them it's the forehead, keep your eyes open, follow through, just like you follow through on your shots on your foot, you know, letting you hit the ball, don't let the ball hit you.
Yeah.
And they pick it up. Now, if you're on the third or fourth team and you're not really an athlete, you know, I've got some players that I know who are still kind of a bit squeamish about it, but hey.
Hopefully the parents aren't listening.
Yeah. You know, they're not on the first team, or the second team. But, you know, but they're, you know, it's not a big deal. They're enjoying the sport and learning and growing, and, you know, they'll pick up heading eventually.
Yeah. Concussions suck, man. I'm all for the protection of players, but I'm also on the other side. Like, just let them head it, man. Just let them play naturally, but don't create too many barriers. But I've had 3 concussions, and they're miserable. They're miserable. So I wouldn't want a kid to go through that, definitely. Because, like, you have headaches for, like, sometimes months. I had headaches for months.
Yeah,
it was terrible.
Yeah. I ran into a concrete post once. Didn't have a concussion, but, you know.
Yeah, because you're tough,
man. Just hard-headed Englishman.
Because you
know?
You were heading at a young age.
Yeah, it was the heading that prepared me for the concrete post.
Yeah.
It's still my brother's fault because he was chasing me. And I was getting away and I looked back and was like, you know,
boof,
teasing. And I turned around and just boom.
So you were teasing though?
Well, you know, I just, you know, my you brother was older. It. He was older. He should have been catching me before I hit the post.
Yeah. Well, what else you got? You got anything on that, Marcos?
No, that's too medical question, but I think that helped also to bring more kids to the soccer field than...
You think they're scared? They're like, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to play because I'm not headed.
The parents... is moving for American football to soccer when...
Football's too dangerous. Because, American football's too dangerous.
That just too dangerous. Maybe this rule help build more people bring to soccer. I don't know if it's American true football. Or not.
I know a lot of you know, people who know American football players aren't letting some of their sons play. Yeah. So.
Do you think we can get a shift here in Detroit from American football to soccer?
I mean, soccer's hugely popular here with the youth.
It's huge here.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And Detroit Power, they got like, Mayor Duggan wants to do like an 8,000 kid initiative.
Oh, I mean, in the city? Well, in the city, you've got now the field house that's open where you
train the kids.
I mean, and there's tons of opportunity.
Yeah.
Here it's great. When I moved here 10 years ago, was fields are empty and now they are full. To play adults today is hard to find a field.
Yeah, that's why
we become too.
That's why we got Detroit Soccer District. Hello.
Yeah, but
that's a mini pitch.
Where's the 11v11?
That's a mini pitch, but that's where the development grows. Mini pitches. We talked about it.
There's quite a few. There's some off like 14 and Trumbull, right, in that area, and near just above Corktown.
Yeah,
there's some fields. There's fields around Belle Isle, Argentina. Trained there. 94. It's overgrown.
Yeah. So 94. Where else did they train? They trained in Pontiac. No, they played in Pontiac.
Played in Pontiac.
Were you here then? Were you in the U.S.?
No.
When did you come to the U.S.?
98. I was on the West Coast. I got to meet a young Landon Donovan. Had a beer with him then.
Yeah, you were going to play professional or something.
In my dreams.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, that's what you came... Isn't that what you came here for?
No, well, I came coaching. I had done a coaching license during my sports degree in England, and I was able to come coaching. And there was, there may be some trials somewhere, but I was never good enough. I was good enough to get over here and do a few little things, but...
Yeah, he's pretty cheeky. I played against him before, yeah. And he always makes fun of me when I'm playing.
It's always fun when you nutmeg a Brazilian.
Yeah. Yeah. So we only got a little bit of time left. But so to develop the system here, and let's take away, if we believe the system here is broken.
Who believes that?
I mean, I was at the United Soccer Coaches thing, and they believe the system is broken. I think even from an urban standpoint, because like you go from recreational to like club to college, not everybody wants to go to college or has the opportunity to go to college, then you go to pro. So like
so you mean like the funneling into a professional, that
right
type of
right system. right so how do we you know, in the inner city, how can we develop that, how can we develop a differences? And I think the big thing is like pay to play.
I mean that all that sort of stuff is a bit broken, but ultimately if you're good enough you'll get found. If you're good enough you're gonna get found. If you're kicking around in the inner city, you know, the clubs can do scholarships and that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's like any sport, you know. The story Clint Dempsey, he was in rural Texas, right? He had to drive an hour and a half each way to practice growing up.
A lot of kids do that here.
Yeah.
They drive from Grand Rapids.
Well, they used to before the crew had an academy. Now the crew's got an academy.
Grand Rapids is a solid place for soccer, man. Hey, man, they just funnel like Why are you laughing at that?
Well, yeah, I remember back and when I was playing in high school, going up over there playing Grand Rapids, and they kicked my team's butt so bad that they had a bunch of players on that team that were really good, and I was just like,
yeah,
shaking my head because they were way more advanced than we were.
But that's not Grand Rapids is not considered inner city. A lot of the development comes from like suburbs there because that's an affluent area.
Well, you got all that DeVos money, you know, those fields behind Myers there. If you get the Crew Cup and that sort of stuff,
and they have a big Hispanic population there that's dominating with like you heard of ABK,
yeah. Well, ABK, that's the futsal, yeah.
I think it's not the Toros. There's another one out there too.
Yeah, ABK. They focus on futsal though mainly.
Yeah,
they do a good job with it.
Yeah, there's another one L something. I forgot, but they have good squads coming out of there.
Yeah, I mean. To answer that question, you probably have to get – I mean, I can't really answer that. I mean, I didn't grow up in the city, and I mean, haven't been coaching long enough here to be able to answer that very well. I think you'd have to get somebody else.
Yeah, I just work with adults, with the retired.
All right, so we're wrapping up for time. Any last comments from you guys? No. All right. So, So we'll be doing this on a weekly basis. Tune in next week. You know, if you're looking for anywhere to play a mini soccer pitch in Detroit Soccer District, check out the website, DetroitSoccerDistrict.com. We're located at 5157 Stanton Street, which is by Warren and Grand River, 5 minutes west of Wayne State. You can see the Renaissance Building if you step out onto Grand River from our spot. Everyone's been there. I'm pretty sure it's been good competition. Yep. So if you're looking for personal training, leagues, rentals, DetroitSoccerDistrict.com.